Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Steven. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Steven. Sorry for talking over you. I was so excited for my debut.
Oh, rookies. Rookies. yes, Mo is on assignment this week, unable to join us, so our good friend Steven Ajami has decided to stepped up and said he would record so that you, the listeners, would not be devoid of our wrestling brilliance.
Exactly.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
I have a fat voice, but I do not have a fat body, so hopefully I'll be able to fill Mo's body and voice.
I don't think you want to be saying that you want to fill Mo's body.
Not literally.
No.
Just mentally.
Yes. Well, that
okay,
would be
never mind. Too.
Yes, this will be the lightest edition of We Talk Wrestling ever.
The skinniest version.
Skinny, yes. As we are skinny fat. But
there you go.
But all jokes aside, unfortunately, we have to start off with some unfortunate news. The passing of William Moody, known best to wrestling fans as both Paul Bearer and Percival Pringle III, passed away, I guess, Saturday. Of a blood clot. What, I guess, that stands out for you in terms of when I say Paul Bearer, what do you think of?
I usually think when I was little, I was literally scared of him. That's like the memories I have of him. You know, just watching The Undertaker and him come down to the ring and just in my younger days, I'm like, God, that guy freaks the heck out of me. So and I can always remember, the one moment I always remember is when they had the Undertaker Mankind boiler room brawl.
Right.
And I couldn't believe that Paul Bearer had turned on the Undertaker.
Yes.
So that was I know we were saying beforehand moments, and I said my memory sucks as far as big moments go, but that memory always stuck out in my mind, and Mankind would keep saying Uncle Paul, and I really liked when they were kind of together. Of course, you know, when he introduced Kane, I think that was a big moment, especially because you had The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels going at First Hell in a Cell.
Right.
And then you throw this aspect in there. So it was just, you know, those were kind of my standout moments that I remember as far as Mr. Paul Bearer goes.
It's funny you say, because I literally just thought of this and remembered this now, and talking about memory sucking, but when you said as a kid, I do remember the man they call B, when is the Undertaker for Halloween one year, is when he was a kid, and my dad taking him around got an urn and went as Paul Bearer.
There you go.
Joined. So my dad has been Paul Bearer for Halloween before, and I literally just remembered that this second.
There you go. I'm glad I could be of memory.
Exactly, of memories. But when you think, I mean, you go back a long time wrestling personality, wrestling fan. I mean, he was a fan. He was in the Gulf Coast region. Him and Michael P.S. Hayes, like before they even got into the business, were friends, and would go to the shows together and whatnot. So, you know, he'd come in as a manager in I want to say it was in Florida or in the Texas area as Percival Pringle III. The gimmick being that he was part of the heir to the Pringles potato chip family.
Well, there you go.
That he was.
Why would that not work?
Exactly. And the thing was, though, is that, I mean, gimmick aside, along like Jim Cornette is, you know, a rich, you know, mama's boy type personality as a manager. But it did work.
Okay.
And he managed Ravishing Rick Rude. Most notably in Texas. And in between those stints, he actually got out of the business and become an actual mortician.
Yeah. I heard he had a fascination with the dead. So I guess that works to bring the gimmick to real life.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, he did manage Mark Callis in Texas briefly. Mm-hmm. And then he went off to WCW as Mean Mark Calloway, and Paul didn't. I think that's when he actually may have gotten out of the business and did that. And then when The Undertaker, originally managed by Brother Love, it was just a natural fit to bring, you know, Moody in. And, you know, even the name Paul Bearer, you know, as a kid, it wasn't until years later I knew what a Paul Bearer was.
Exactly, yeah. You know, you just kind of assumed it was a name, and then you're like, oh, well, that's why.
Yeah.
It was all together.
The guy's name was Paul Bearer. I'm like, okay, well, that could be a name, right? So.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, he said, I mean, coming in, and he hosted the funeral parlor, which was, you know, like a Piper's Pit, Miz TV type segment, you know, and lots of things, you know, happened in terms of that when you're talking about Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan stare downs, you know, Jake the Snake, you know, and Undertaker turning face really happened on, didn't happen on that show, but it was progressed on that funeral parlor show. And, yeah, like you said, Undertaker and Paul Bearer as baby faces tied together until that, I think, 1996 it was, Boiler Room Brawl at SummerSlam, where, you know, he would smash the urn over the Undertaker's head and become Uncle Paul, as a member, and turned, you know, turned heel and went up against the Undertaker. I mean, I still remember, I mean, when you talk about Paul Bearer as well, going through his career. I mean, The Voice.
The Voice. That's what I was just getting ready to say. You can always remember that, oh, yeah, which is probably a horrible impersonation, but I'll try my best.
But he was like a Stu Hart in that everybody has an impression of Paul Bearer, you know, like a Howard Finkel. You know, everybody does Paul Bearer. You know, oh, Yoko Tuna.
There you go.
We're very angry.
You got it down better than me, so I will give you the Paul Bearer award-winning impression.
With the double wide, double deep, you know, casket that they did, and but I mean, yeah, they, going back to, I mean, getting a little off topic, but going back when he turned heel, you know, had Mankind there, then that kind of broke away as Mankind was starting to turn face.
Mm-hmm.
And that association. And he actually managed actually a masked Terry Bam Bam Gordy as the executioner for a time, a short run in late 96 at the Armageddon pay-per-view in December of 96. I think he made his debut in – or he made his appearance in the Buried Alive match where Mankind –
That's right, yeah.
– buried – helped Mankind bury The Undertaker alive. And then you know, and then, but that's when all of a sudden he got to he was blackmailing The Undertaker, the story, to be as right after WrestleMania as Undertaker had won his first WWF title. And he was blackmailing The Undertaker to be his manager. You know, you'll do what I say if you know what's good for you. And The Voice was starting to become normal. It wasn't the cartoony, you know, over the top, oh, yes. He was starting to sound normal. But then he was blackmailing The Undertaker, and then Undertaker finally couldn't take anymore, so he finally said, this is, you know, your brother's alive. He's alive, Undertaker! Your brain is alive! And then he was starting to show proof, and it was this really long, dragged-out storyline.
Yeah.
That, you know, started with the blackmail after Mania, would culminate at WrestleMania 14 with Kane against Undertaker. But as you said, Kane making his debut at the first ever Hell in a Cell, you know, with Vince McMahon's, that's gotta be Kane! That's gotta be Kane! And, you know, but...
Mr. Obvious.
Exactly, yes. But, and then, you know, from there, he, again, was in and out. When he was managing Kane, he wasn't managing Kane. You know, he was kind of going, you know, back and forth. He'd show up with him and he wouldn't show up with him. And then, you know, finally around 2000, I think it was, is when he parted ways with WWE. And, you know, he did some indie shots. Was in TNA for a brief run as well.
You never knew that part, but apparently that's because TNA even had a little remembrance for him, I believe. So
yes,
is what I was reading.
Which is, you know, and right, I mean, he was on when they were doing the weekly pay-per-views. He was on some of those against Vince Russo and things like that. And but then they'd asked him to come back to WWE. They wanted him back, and he had said no.
Okay.
Because he'd said he was just too fat. You know, that's why Mo isn't on the show.
There you go. We had to get one in, didn't you?
But to their credit, I mean, you can say a lot about WWE and you know things they've done, but they paid for they hired him back, paid for gastro bypass surgery for him, and he credited that for prolonging his life, saving his life even at that point. And of course, then he come back with both Kane and the Undertaker when the Dead Man Biker gimmick was run its course, and the American Badass had run its course, and he was back to being the Dead Man. Then, Paul Bearer accompanied him for a while, and until being buried in concrete.
Yeah, that part I was just like, okay, I'll still never really understand what that was all about, but whatever. That's one of those moments. So
it was wrestling in about 2004 or five.
Yeah.
SmackDown with Mordecai's and things like that. It was something they did.
Exactly.
For a while. Most recently, he was being in that Edge and Kane storyline, whatever that was a couple years ago now, where Paul Bearer was being killed every week.
There you go. Well, he was part of the Orton-Kane feud.
Yeah.
Because isn't that where Orton had him in the back, like he pushed him in the freezer or something like that, I thought, too.
That's right, yes. I think that was his last appearance, actually.
Yeah, I believe so. What a way to go out.
Right. Kane left him in the freezer, right? So, but I mean, a character in terms of Paul Bearer that really transcended, he's one of those iconic characters. I mean, they mentioned him it was for about 45 seconds or so today on Good Morning America.
Okay.
Oh, and so wow. When you talk about Paul Bearer, there's a lot of people outside of, if you say, wrestling of Paul Bearer, oh, yeah. They may not know everything about Paul Bearer. But
exactly.
But it's like, oh yeah, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Undertaker, Paul Bearer. He's kind of one of those names for a lot of people that just roll off with wrestling.
And, yeah, exactly.
It really is a shame. By all accounts, just a wonderful human being too. No one, maybe other than Sonny, having a bad word to say about him.
Exactly. Okay.
And the feeling.
So do you think Punk brings up this in any promos leading up to WrestleMania? That's my question.
Yeah, I hope not.
I mean, I know they did go the angle with the heart attack of Jerry Lawler, but...
Yeah, and I hope they realize the mistake that they made with that. Because it was...
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't think you do. I don't know that you need to... He doesn't need that heat.
Yeah, that's true.
He can get it other ways, more...
Especially with this type of match that, they're going to go into. So, do you think Undertaker pays any tribute to Paul Bearer at WrestleMania, or does it just kind of happen, at this Raw and then, kind of moves on?
I would expect the graphic on SmackDown to open the show. I would expect a tribute video on Raw. And, I think he would do something at WrestleMania to, I don't know what it would be, like a kneel down or a, point to the sky.
And just to honor him. I mean, I feel like that's something that should be expected, so.
At WrestleMania, grabbing the urn and, pointing to the sky or something,
I've seen that brought up a few times, too, that somehow the urn should come into play, and, that's like the tribute to Paul Bearer, so.
Paul Bearer helped Undertaker beat Punk.
There you go. Punk had God, and the Undertaker had Paul Bearer.
Yes.
So.
Oh, and another question, because, hell, I wrote back in September on WeTalkWrestling.com
mm-hmm.
My 2013 WWE Hall of Fame class.
Okay.
Who I put in, and the manager that I put in there was Paul Bearer.
Wow.
Yeah. Back then, and so there still is, and I guess there is legitimate talk right now within the company of maybe going that route and having Paul Bearer inducted this year into the Hall of Fame.
And this has to be one of the strongest fields, I think, for the Hall of Fame. It, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's been bigger ones, but I feel like this one, like, I really feel, you know, like everyone could be the headliner, as they, you know, like usually they have one featured guy, and then usually there's the other people, but I feel like this one, it's hard to pick who is, you know, going to headline, even though I believe Mick Foley will. But then again, people probably could also vouch for Bruno, so.
Well, Bruno's headlining. There's not a shadow of a doubt Bruno is headlining this in Madison Square Garden.
That's true, yeah, I forgot about that.
Return to the company after 20 years. And literally, I mean, it's there. He's the longest reigning champion in history. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as great as Foley is, Foley's second banana, you know. And then and that's what you said. It's a shame. I mean, I'm thinking of some other ones in terms of, you know, like when Bret Hart went in, you know, Eddie Guerrero, you know, also went in.
That's true.
And when Hogan went in, Rowdy Piper went in right alongside him. So those are sort of 1-2 punches.
Mm-hmm.
But they said Bruno, and so that's where I see sort of Bruno and Foley, to me, are kind of like Bret and Eddie.
Yeah, exactly.
Going through in a 1-2 punch. But then you've got, you know, do we know it? We've got Trish. I mean, then you got Bob Backlund, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, even though, you know, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Backlund. I understand his place, and, like, I remember him in the early 90s, and, man, I hated that guy.
Yeah.
But that's what you're supposed to do, and I'm like, he's a strong guy. And then you think of Trish Stratus, who's probably the best women's wrestler to come out of the company. And, you know, she was at least able to get out when she could, you know, without hurting herself, I believe. So it's like, I think this really is just one of those classes where you almost feel like I'd watch, you know, every speech for everybody. Just, you know, I wouldn't want to fast forward through it or anything like that.
Yeah.
So.
And you have a legitimate, you have a legitimate celebrity again. You know, it's not Drew Carey that people keep pointing.
And Tyson.
Huh? Well, Mike Tyson.
And Mike
Tyson, though, was, you know, I mean, he was a legitimate guy, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, but Donald Trump, I mean, not only.
Oh, that's fine. My fault, sir. There you go. My memory sucks.
with Edge there, so.
Yeah, that's true.
The Horseman last year. So, but no, I really think with Donald Trump, I mean, hosting WrestleMania 4 and 5 at Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino on the boardwalk, Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And of course, being part of the highest, grossing or the biggest buy rate WrestleMania of all time, right? So, and really headlining it, no pun intended.
There you go.
But, so, I mean, yeah, this is a strong WrestleMania class. But as if we're getting a little off topic of Paul.
Sorry, a little, yeah, my fault.
Paul of Fame and Paul Bearer definitely deserves to be in, as I said, just, you know, from all accounts, a class act and someone that's going to be missed. One of, you know, it would say it, but we lost one of the good guys in the business on Saturday. So thoughts and prayers to Paul Bearer. And I guess the only thing we could say in wrapping up Paul Bearer's topic is Paul Bearer going to be missed? Oh, yeah.
There you go.
So
rest in peace.
Peace, absolutely. So, but let's just move on from a sad topic, and let's move on to sort of old school Raw.
There you go.
I do a lot of old school stuff there, but what did you think of old school Raw?
I enjoy it. I am the person that loves the gimmick Raw. You know, you can say whatever you want about that, but I love the old graphics going up at the old ring, and even Justin Roberts in the leisure suit.
Yes.
And I mean, sure, the fatal four-way for whoever was going to face The Undertaker was kind of a cop-out, and it goes to show that, you know, the other three guys don't have much to do for WrestleMania. But I felt like it was a good way to kind of get, you know, I didn't want Punk and Undertaker just to be like, okay, I'm going to go after you. I kind of get over that type of stuff. So
yeah.
I thought Punk actually fighting for the chance, I mean, in a way, yes, it looks like it's almost bigger than the title, but
it is, because it is.
I mean, that's
I mean,
at this rate, it feels like it's bigger. And
the streak has been protected better than the title, better than the Royal Rumble win. I mean, that the streak is, if you can beat the streak, it's like beating Ric Flair's record all in one night. You know, and being a 17-time champion, like it is. It's just like that because it has been kept so, so protected, so sacred, right?
Which is why I think Punk has to beat him, but I don't think it happens. But I still want it to happen.
Yeah,
I feel like the streak is. I mean, you got the DVD out of it. You have the 20-0, and I feel like I don't know where Punk will go after if he loses to. You know, Undertaker, it's like, where can he go then?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you can just build him right back up, but I feel like if he beats Taker, then you can just throw him right back in the championship just like it's nothing. So, I mean...
I think if he loses, I think you could probably throw him too. I mean, it's...
That's true.
You know, I think, you know, good guys like The Rock and Flair, and then I'll throw Punk in there, is, you know, the ability to lose and not be over. I mean, look at Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Daniel Bryan is a similar situation where, sure, he's not on the top of the card right now, but he's established a role and he's still over. You know, despite the lack, let's say, of company behind him, he's still, you know, in a prominent spot. So, but I mean, when it comes to the old school nature of Raw, yeah, I mean, I love the red, white, and blue ropes, the old RAW at the front, the old music. You know, the turnbuckles there, that sort of deal. I said it last week, is that I thought I would be let down because last old school Raw is really like one of my favorite episodes that they've ever done of the show. And, you know, and it just goes top to bottom. I thought, you know, just guys you didn't expect and, you know, George Steele out of nowhere eating a turnbuckle and stuff like that. And, you know, when I saw it and it was like, you know, Swagger beats Duggan with, you know, Dusty and Slaughter with him. It's like, okay, yeah, cool. You know, it's like.
'Cause we keep seeing the same people. And that's, I mean, like you've seen Hacksaw. I think, you know, we saw that Raw 1000. We've seen him before then. You know, it's just like.
The thing,
but then again, you know, we don't have the guys like Owen, British Bulldog that we want to see because they're not here. That's how I feel.
Well, there is that, too. I mean, yeah, they are the ones that are left, I guess, for the word. But, I mean, it's. I look at it, though, as. And I don't have a problem with Duggan. I would have had Duggan come out against Cesaro, you know, the U.S. champion. And then, you know, and then you could get the USA, you know, and there. But, I mean, to me it was just, especially because Jack Swagger is supposed to be in one of the top matches at WrestleMania. And so for him, I mean, to beat Duggan and, you know, okay, big deal, right? Yeah. So it was kind of like, yeah, and I understood why the three of them were paired, right? Because he had the American Dream and,
well, yeah, exactly.
You know, and Sergeant Slaughter, who on Twitter I said, well, remember, Sergeant Slaughter, he's a real Iraqi.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have the American characters, right? You had everything but Nikolai Volkoff up there, right?
So waving the flag.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was... You know, that was that one. And, I mean, the Honky Tonk Man, I mean, I didn't get to listen to the Honky Tonk Man sing.
There you go.
And that pissed me off. Because he come out and he did his thing, and I thought, okay, good, he's going to get on the microphone. Thank you very much, I love you, you know. You know, you're going to listen to the Honky Tonk Man sing. And I didn't get to hear that. So that pissed me off. I mean, like, what was the – I guess what I sort of boiled down to it is that and the Million Dollar Man, right? I mean, on the app. Said, you know, if you win this match, primetime players, I'll manage you, right?
Yeah.
You know, A, we knew they weren't
going to
win anyway, and B, you know, he's not coming back as a manager, but that made sense at least. Millions of dollars, the connection was there.
That did have one of my favorite moments with Daniel Bryan stealing the $100 bill out of Darren Young's mouth. I thought that was... I'm like, that made the whole match for me. I'm like, I don't even care that Daniel Bryan and Kane won. Like, when he did that, because I was like, that's just so... I mean, it's so in Bryan's character almost to do that.
And I also loved the Where is Virgil chant. Ted DiBiase was like, just, you could see that he was just smiling.
Yeah. I'm sure he's just selling autographs down at the subway station. That's the last I've heard of him.
Well, that's what I thought, is that Virgil was going to come out earlier with Tenzai and Brodus, right? Because they figured, you know, Tenzai is the A train.
There you go.
Would have just thought at home in the subway station. But again, and I'm trying to think now. You had the Honky Tonk Man, and then 3MB, and that, and you know, and then you had Mae Young out for 30 seconds, you know, there, and Mean Gene introducing for Punk just to walk by.
That was a good moment too. I love the look on Punk's face where he just like,
yeah,
you know, this is when he's like, what is this going on? And then didn't Mark Henry like kind of walk over to Mae Young, which I thought was hilarious,
and give her a hug, yeah.
Hey, I'll like, give her a hug. He probably got her pregnant again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for Mae Young's hand to be back.
Yeah, the hand should have popped up there.
He's all grown up. You know, it's good to see. But I don't know. Punk's line when he looked into the crowd and said, "Do something about it, woman." That was cool. But I mean, the point, I guess, in terms of all this old school Raw, is like none of them spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Mean Gene for, you know, a couple of things. Like, they're literally, the set changed, and there were flash appearances of Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, I mean, I didn't really expect much more, honestly, so I don't know
what
you expect.
Well, I just contrasted it to the last old school Raw, right, where we had Mean Gene standing at the old podium, the black podium.
Oh, okay.
To someone. And that whole thing. You had Piper's Pit, you know, don't spit in my face, John Cena.
And okay.
You had George Steele coming down, ripping open the turnbuckle. Like, every segment had a legend doing something, saying something, being involved somehow. And this, you had a match from Hacksaw, you know, kind of. And
I don't even know if you're going to call that a match.
Exactly. But, I mean, so that was it. I mean, it did a hell of a 3.5 rating. Over 5 million people watched it.
Yeah.
And, you know, 4.1 for that Rock and Cena segment, which is really important, you know, in the whole grand scheme of things. But in terms of the legendary part, I mean, The Undertaker came out at the beginning, I guess, right? And it set it around, like you said, that match. And it's good that there was a win. To put him.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest thing. I think he has to show that he wants to go after it and not just talk about it, you know, like Triple H did and like Shawn Michaels did. I mean,
yeah.
Because we know Punk could fight, and that's the thing. So you might as well have him fight for it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that'll be good. That sets up Punk and Undertaker at WrestleMania. That's a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
They had the stare down to end the show, so Undertaker bookended the show. We know, of course, we've got Rock, John Cena. What did you think of that segment, the interview, the face-to-face, or whatever they were called?
I didn't really mind it. I know some people probably hated it because it was just a bunch of talking, but, I mean, I love the line about Lance Armstrong when he's like, you're just full of crap, and I was like, you know what? And you could almost, I mean, obviously it's all, you know, promo, but you almost get the feeling that Rock really believes that, and I think that's what you got to do to sell a match.
Well, yeah.
And I mean... And who knows, maybe he probably doesn't feel that way, but I thought, you know...
The Rock is really against guys taking steroids and lying about it.
Yeah.
That's what The Rock gets most mad about. You know, the guy that had the gyno tit surgery in 1999?
Okay.
Rock? You know, Rock got his pecs done there because he got the gyno titties from taking the steroids. He hates steroid users.
There you go.
And lying about it, damn it, covering it up. Can't stand it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was a good line. And it was funny, the little, you know, you're going to Buffalo, good God, it's cold, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever he said, honey boo boo something.
Honey boo boo tits, I don't know. That's
Harlem.
I just thought, I didn't think they needed to get physical because they've gotten physical before. So, I mean, I didn't expect anything to break out, you know, like.
The story.
I thought this. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, the story right now is about the title.
Mm-hmm.
I want the belt and redemption, but it's not just about winning the match, it's about taking that.
Yeah.
And that's the key to me.
Because I was going to say, everybody always keeps saying about the title should be the main event, and now we'll get that, so people can't complain too much. Obviously, in the internet wrestling community, that's all they want to do, but I'm like, well, now the title's been the focal point for, you know, how long now? It's been probably the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. I mean, even at the Royal Rumble,
We
had the Royal Rumble main event team, or we had the title match at the end of the night, before the Rumble, or after the Rumble, which I thought didn't need to happen, but because I'm like, it's a Royal Rumble, so that happened.
But there's a title change, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that, I think, you know, and it's the Rock, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
the title,
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, circumstances, and it's, and like I said, it's the title. So, I mean, the Royal Rumble, if you think about it, the Royal Rumble is for a shot at the title, right?
Mm-hmm.
The title match is the title. So, I mean, I have no problem in terms of that match order, I guess. But
yeah.
The other thing, too, you said, I mean, we talk about, you know, Punk's long streak, you know, with the belt. And then now The Rock holding it and John Cena wanting it. I mean, again, we talk about how the title should be the focal point and the main event. And now the main event of WrestleMania is for the title. And more importantly, they're making that mean something.
Exactly.
You know, that's what I had sort of said, is that I was all right with Rock Cena twice in a lifetime, given, I mean, we laid out the scenario back in July at Raw 1000, you know, Punk Rock Mania, or at Rumble, when Rock come back and says he's going to get the shot at the Rumble. Okay, Punk Rock Rumble, Rock wins, Rock Cena 2 at WrestleMania. I mean, that was clear as day, and that was what is right for business. It's a matter of now, the only way to make it bigger is to have the title, and they're not resting on their laurels going, yeah, it's for the title. It's actually being talked about, which is good.
Yeah. And like I said, that's what everybody keeps wanting, so now we're, you know,
well,
now you can actually...
Yeah.
Something, I don't know where I was going with that. But.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at, there wasn't any Goo Goo Gaga either.
Yeah.
I mean, it was stuff. It wasn't poopy. It wasn't, you know, that kind of stuff, right? So that is good. I mean, we've got Punk and Taker that we've got a reason for. We've got Rock and Cena that, you know, obviously had a reason, but now has, you know, that drive, at least right now, of the title behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're two for two. What do you think about Hunter's promo against Brock, or challenging Brock, I guess?
I didn't mind it. I felt like the crowd was dead, but I felt that the crowd was dead the whole evening. So I didn't seem like anybody really cared. I know we were talking right before we went live here. I'll be in Raw on Monday night in Indy, and they keep touting Brock Lesnar's appearance, like for the local ads here.
Okay.
So I'm pretty interested to see what, you know, how Lesnar comes out and answers the challenge. You know, maybe I doubt we'll get Triple H there as well, but who knows?
I think I would think you'd get Triple H. I mean, when you get Brock, you don't get The Rock.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the conscious choice, because they're going to fight at WrestleMania 30, so they're keeping them apart. I think they're only on, like, one show together, the go-home show. They're both on. So
well, that sucks for me. Thanks.
Well, if you get asked, so now you don't get your hopes up, right?
No, I didn't. I figured, you know, every other week is going to be one of the, you know, main events will be featured. So
which
is probably how it should be, because you don't want to – I don't think you want to overload each Raw, because then people will get upset after Mania when every Raw isn't overloaded. So
well, and it you can tell the story, you know, without, you know, you can give Cena's side of the story and this week and Rock's next, and you can give Hunter did his, and then Brock, you know, so you can play these stories that way, and it spaces them out. I mean, I was talking, Mo and I talked about last summer about what was good about TNA. That, you know, you're getting different guys featured each week on Impact, and this is kind of the same thing, where you're spacing it all out, and it's all sort of going to come to a head on March, or on April 7th. So, but in terms of the promo, I mean, the highlight to me was, you know, as I sat beside this old man, and he called Vince like an old man.
Yeah, he kept saying that, and I was like, okay. I mean, it was a good line, but...
I just thought it was...
Yeah, oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But made me laugh anyway.
They should have flashed up that picture that Vince touted out or put out that he was flipping off the camera. Oh. That would have been a good little throw up there. So
Vince McMahon on Twitter, by the way.
Yeah, I saw, and Stephanie is now on there as well. So
at Vince,
if you want to, at Vince McMahon, there we go. So we'll start there. You can start booking your ideas to him. I'm sure he'll read them.
He has had zero tweets.
Oh, no. Well, never mind then.
He follows 23 people.
Who does he follow? All of his family?
He follows Stephanie, Hunter. He follows Howard Finkel.
Oh, of course. Who wouldn't have?
He follows Donald Trump.
Oh, well, yeah. Obviously, that makes sense.
And then he follows, like, the WWE Network.
The Network? Oh, that's still around.
Huh. WWE Films. WWE Music, NXT.
I want to just start tweeting him, like, all the dirt sheets and just see if he'll follow them.
Yeah, yeah, hey, follow the Observer.
Follow We Talk Wrestling, there you go.
There you go, see?
If he follows you guys, then, man, you'll be set for life.
We have a couple of, we have one WWE Hall of Famer I know of that follows us, but,
And who is that?
The Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
Oh, there you go. Well, I met him back when WrestleMania 8 was here.
Wow.
I know. That's all I have, though. I was only like 10, so I don't remember much of the meeting other than I met him.
Managing what, Money Incorporated probably then?
I believe so, because I try to remember that WrestleMania, but...
Against the natural disasters, earthquake,
was that
typhoon, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah, I believe.
Sure. I just know that was... I've seen a few places that Hulk Hogan versus Sid was one of the worst WrestleMania events. So
yes,
I'm like, man, I'm just getting all the good stuff here.
Yeah, I know. And you missed the fan expo by a year. I guess every Survivor Series now they're going to be doing a fan fest similar to the
Royal. Oh my God, you're just like pouring it on, aren't you?
I know. This is a mountain of great news. But yes, every Survivor Series now they're planning all the Big Four. They've already been doing it at SummerSlam and WrestleMania, and I guess we just saw Mo and I were at the first All Access Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I know. I was surprised that they had all the. Didn't they have I can't think of the. Where they talked about WCW.
Oh, the Pack
of Fate. Sorry, yeah, that's the shoot things or whatever you want to say.
Shooting straight P-anals, yeah, they were...
P-anals.
yeah, they were tremendous. Yeah, they had three of them. Staring at my autographed CM Punk picture right now that you got as part of it.
I met him too, though. I've met CM Punk.
Oh, nice.
It was at a JD Byrider, which is like a car dealership down here.
JD Byrider.
Seriously, I walked in and there was nobody there. It was me and my 16-year-old brother. We walked right up, said our piece, and walked right out.
Wow.
No line, nothing. It was the least advertised.
How long ago was that?
That would have been in 2011 when it was going to be the Raw after he came back before SummerSlam.
Oh, wow.
Because remember, he came back, and then it was going to, like, he came back with the title, and then the next week he was actually on the Raw. So, yeah, there was nobody there.
Wow.
But then I met Mick Foley, and it was, like, took an hour and a half just to get through the line.
I met Greg the Hammer Valentine, took the line 45 minutes just to get warmed up.
There you go, yeah.
And you've met Edge.
I have met Ed. That one, that's probably my highlight. I got to do the 5-second pose with him.
I think that was the picture that I saw on Facebook, I believe it was.
Yep, I did the I go, do you mind doing the 5-second pose? He's like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
And I told him, I feel old now because he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, I grew up watching you. And he said, well, you know, if the Hall of Fame comes calling, you can't really turn it down.
No.
So I was like, I know. And I just, you know, kind of. Joking him, because you get up to those things, I'm like, man, what do I say, you know, but.
Speaking of feeling old, my girlfriend texted me, she took a picture of, she's a teacher, grade three, and she took a picture of this, the phrase or the one of the kids had to write a story or whatever. And so she sent it to me, and the story goes, a long time ago in the 1980s, is how the story started. I don't know.
There you go.
Ancient times.
Ancient days. Yeah. Days of yore.
Days of yore. Yes.
Oh. So I have met, and I know you will not like this, but I have met The Miz. I did meet The Miz at a J&D Bike Rider as well.
Really?
And that was no line at all. So
you don't,
apparently they just advertised for these. We actually met The Miz twice because then he was at the Pacers game that night, and we went up again and said something to him. He's like, oh, I remember you guys, because I thought, well, of course you remembered us, because nobody else was there.
We're the only ones that showed up to your autograph signing.
Yes. So I'm staring at my Miz autograph that's on a poster. So I've met, you know, four guys that I enjoy. So, I mean, that's four wrestlers that I didn't think I'd ever meet, honestly.
Four guys that you enjoy and The Miz.
Yes, four guys and The Miz.
Four guys and The Miz. Wow, that cocksucking motherfucker.
I know you. I figured you would have something pleasant to say about him. But.
Oh, fuck. I hate that guy. I mean, especially like, well, Ric Flair was on Raw. Yeah,
Ric Flair was on Raw.
Such a wonderful use of the legends that I go, oh, yeah, Ric Flair was on Raw.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm okay with it, but, I mean, how would you use him then? I'm just, you know.
Well, as I said, I would use him as, I mean, the Flair, I mean, my mentor. The Miz's mentor, like, come on. I mean, Flair's the easiest thing for Flair is, you know, for Hunter to say, you know, I'm retired. You know, I came out, I helped. That's it. I said I was done. I'm running the company. I'm done. And Flair looks at him, gets that blood red face. You know, you're retired. That is the Triple H, and I know. And he fires him up.
And
he says, Rock, WrestleMania. You're mine, you're dead. And, like, that's all you have to do. Drop the microphone, it's all about the game starts playing, and boom, and then Brock has to answer the challenge. But that's how, I mean, because that to me is the equivalent of Don't Spit in My Face, John Cena, from Roddy Piper.
Okay.
You know, is using Flair the way it should be, not, you know, backing off of Big E Langston and, you know, and just doing a Flair flop for no reason and, you know, like, you know, that's all well and good and fine, but it's, you know, if you're going to use them, use them. You know, use them to.
I guess I'm just glad they're using them with the younger guys. That's how I look at it, because I feel like just that's how Flair should be used, but, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I can give you that. I mean, that's not the guy I would use them with.
Well, no. But I felt like The Miz needed somebody like that, too.
Yeah.
That's probably why I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're going to give him something, I mean, I guess I wouldn't waste Flair. I mean, I would use it with Cody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I understand. I mean, the theory isn't bad, you know?
Now, would you use them with Ziggler? Because I saw everybody saying that Flair and Ziggler should have been. But I don't know. I want Ziggler just to finally be done on his own, but.
Well, the thing with Flair and Ziggler, if you were going to do that, is, again, you've got the dichotomy that, I think I even said it on the show when those rumors were coming around the end of the year last year, was, you know, Flair had his executive consultant.
Okay.
In Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, that's true.
And Ziggler, you know, with the I Am Perfection, he's the guy that is the show off now, but, I mean, he gets compared to Perfect all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a 360 coming or a 180 where you've got, you know, Flair being the executive consultant to Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I mean, so I wouldn't have a problem necessarily with that. But, I mean, you got AJ and Big E. You don't need to add any more to that parade of act or whatever the hell that is, right? So.
Yeah.
But you think Ziggler is going to win at Mania, going to cash in and win the title? Yeah.
That was just what I was getting ready to say. It's like, I don't know when he's going to cash in, because I'm like, July's going to be here before we know it, and are they just going to, like, throw out the, oh, well, it's a year-long, or, you know, they always say it's a year-long contract or whatever.
Right.
I think he has to cash in at Mania, because I feel like what bigger stage is there going to be? Because you have Extreme Rules, you have, now they're, what, it's called Payback?
Yeah, it's going to be Payback. I don't know.
Which is up in Chicago, so I'm tempted if things work out, it might head up there, I don't know yet.
Yeah.
But now, I would be okay with maybe cashing that Money in the Bank, though. like wait until the very end and then boom, he catches.
Yeah.
But I feel like Mania or what, you know, when is it going to happen?
Well, I think if he does it at Mania, he's going to be this huge face. He's going to get over so huge.
Especially in New York City, where they cheer the heels anyway, right?
Well, so. And talent. They cheer talent.
Yeah,
and
talent, sorry. Yeah.
And it's the hardcore, too. I mean, well, they cheer heels, too, but they also cheer talent.
Yeah.
So
it's just talent, yeah.
And the thing is this Jack Swagger, Zeb Coulter thing just you know, it isn't getting any traction to me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people are very high on Zeb, but not high on Swagger. Pardon all the puns about being high, but
Well, but I mean, Swagger ability wise and Coulter microphone wise, and the act
should work out.
The act together is fine. It's again, it's the uncomfortable message that they're sending, and really there's a shelf life to it, and I just don't think it's getting over to the point where they'll put the title on them and have anything. And I don't think Del Rio's getting over. You know,
see, I feel like Del Rio is getting, I've always thought Del Rio should be face. I felt like he had more face qualities about him, but
yeah,
I just didn't care for the Destiny thing. Cause that almost seems like a face type thing to say. Cause why would a heel care about their Destiny?
Yeah.
They just care about winning, you know, right now, but a face would be working hard to try to get to that moment. So I felt like Del Rio should have just started as the face side in the beginning, but
well, I think
so. When he,
I think with oh, I just think with Del Rio, the heel thing was he was talking about his destiny and he would cheat to get it. You know,
yeah. I think mean, oh, like Eddie Guerrero almost in a way, cheat to win or whatever.
Well,
but then people start cheering Eddie, so who knows what people want?
Well, but Eddie did it in an entertaining way. You know,
that's true.
The difference. But you know, I don't mind Del Rio as a baby face. I really don't. I think you're right. I think he is better that way, better cast that way. I just don't think either one of them. Like, I just think Ziggler with the belt does more for fan interest and business.
I think it will, and that's why I think it has to happen at Mania. Because what bigger stage?
That's it. Than the opening match at WrestleMania.
Because mm-hmm. I've laid it out before. I'm like, I think Cena should win at Mania. Ziggler wins at Mania. Then they face each other at Money in the Bank to unify the belts. But that's obviously my fantasy world.
Ziggler and Cena at Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Because, I mean, what better way would you... I mean, obviously, you could probably do Extreme Rules. Elimination Chamber, I think, would be a good way to unify the belts if they finally wanted to go that route.
Well,
because you could have one chamber match to say, okay, these two champions and then four contenders or whatever.
Right.
And I feel like Cena and Ziggler still don't have, I don't think they've had closure because you've had Ziggler beat him and then you have Cena beat Ziggler on a Raw. So I feel like you could still go that route and, you know, and if you had it at Money in the Bank, cause you could have Ziggler say, well, I did something you didn't do, cash in. And then, you know, Cena didn't cash in, obviously. So,
yeah.
I mean, it could, I mean, that's just, like I said, that's my fantasy world.
You know,
you're just living in it.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of combining the belts and just going back to the four belts, you know, including the women's belt.
Is that still around?
I know, right? But I did a looking at the NXT roster, and that's really the, I mean, the Divas division is in NXT right now with Sasha Banks and Paige. I mean, they're ready to come up and have unique looks. And can do it, but so I've been thinking after Mania, one if not both of them should get called up anyway.
Sure.
But maybe put a little bit of, I mean, it's a Band-Aid, right? Not a long term solution, but
yeah.
But I am a proponent. I think if you are going to do that, I mean, to me that's such a big match. The two champions collide to unify that's almost a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Deal.
I mean, like I said, it's just
the other thing, if you're going to do it on another show, I would go with Night of Champions.
Yeah, that makes sense, too, you because know. That's the champions. So.
And
I feel like Money in the Bank anymore, though, that's one of the bigger ones. I think we've talked about that before. I don't know. I feel like Money in the Bank might be bigger than Survivor Series now, which...
It is the new Survivor Series, you're right, yeah.
So it's like, you know, you might, I mean, especially in the summertime, you know, when you want, you could probably have the most people really tuning in, but.
Well, you don't, though, and that's the thing.
I mean, I guess you don't, because people could be busy, but
well,
you could try.
It's WrestleMania season, you know, and that's
yeah.
what it is the most people watch now, February, March, April, and then it tends to fall off a bit, and then football starts, and it, you know, goes to pot, and then it starts to come back up again in January, so.
Yeah, it's true.
But, I mean, that's evidence of the 3.5, right, that we just had. So, what did you think about Mark Henry and the Ryback acne?
I'm okay with that. I think, because I knew Ryback, he can't go get the Shield for, what, the third time. So, you know, why not have him go against somebody who, you know, does what he does, as he keeps saying.
Yeah.
And that'll probably be a good just kind of middle-of-the-road match for Mania, you know, something to kind of go between, you know, these big main events. Because
yeah.
I'm really torn on, I like what the Shield's doing, but I feel like they need some purpose, not to get off track, but
mm-hmm.
Just because the Ryback-Shield thing. But I think Ryback and Henry should be, you know, just a good and... I would think that Ryback has to go over, but because he's lost a lot, so
yeah,
I feel like he needs to get some wins, and if he gets it over Henry, he can kind of show he's dominant again. So
yeah, this I love everything about this. I had even said I don't even remember when we did it, but Mo and I we did a list of guys and we picked three that we'd like to see them face each other at Mania. I think we did that back in like November. And Mark Henry was, he wasn't the first person on my list for Ryback. He was in that, he was on that list. And I mean, I just love the stare down as they walked past each other. That reminded me of like, that's how the Jim Duggan Harley Race feud started back in WWE in like 1987, you know, just passing each other in the aisles and bumping each other in the aisle or something that way.
Yeah.
And there's been a few other feuds that started that way too. So simple that was there. And I just think that this, along the same lines, is going to be one of those, they call it the Battle of the Behemoths, right?
Yeah.
And in New York, that area where a lot of big men, and I mean, I just look at this when I go back in history, I'm thinking, you know, like, and Hercules pops out, you know, Hercules and Billy Jack Haynes, Hercules and the Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 4, like those are those kind of matches, and that's kind of what I like about it. I do think Ryback gets booed out of MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, that one surprised me because, like I said, I just feel like, I mean, the Goldberg chase have been coming back, so you really wonder what will happen in, you know, in the middle of MetLife Stadium. So.
And I will love it. The crowd will pretty much make this match, I think.
Yeah, okay.
So
there we go.
Well, we'll move on to the Shield. And Shield looks like they're going to be going against Randy Orton, Sheamus, and the Big Show.
Yeah.
I
don't know what... I feel like how many more threesomes can you put against the Shield? That's why I said I feel like... I understand, you know, the slow movement. You know, it's a little bit nice, you know, instead of just throwing them out there and... you know, kind of having them do what they can do, but at this point, I'm like, okay, now we need them to go somewhere.
Yeah.
I personally thought, I mean, I would have just put them with Lesnar and Triple H forms a team and just had that go, but I understand that Lesnar and Triple H just probably should be one-on-one.
Yeah.
But I just, I like what the Shield does, and I think it's kind of different. I like the promos, you know, when they're backstage.
Mm-hmm. Picking up.
Especially when they beat up Brad Maddox, that was just hilarious. I thought that was...
Yeah.
But I just don't know, you know, I mean, it's Mania, so usually the faces win. I mean, does the Shield dominate this match and, you know, have their Mania moment?
Well, I mean, the Shield have beaten Ryback and the Tag Champions. They've beaten the Super Dicks. So
mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of where I see this going. I mean, Randy Orton... heel turn is still coming. And so Randy Orton turning heel at WrestleMania and costing his team the match, I don't know whether he.
Probably where they'll go.
I don't know if he necessarily aligns himself with the Shield.
I've actually mentioned that before, and people kind of shut me down, but because I don't know if the Shield need a veteran presence, but I feel like they kind of do. Like, I'm very mixed about it. Like, I understand we want them to succeed on their own, and I'm fine with that because, you know, usually when you get these groups, you have to throw in the veteran presence. You know, like,
yeah,
Evolution had Ric Flair and Triple H, and then you had Orton and Batista, who were, like, the up-and-comers, you know.
Yeah. And then Orton transitioned over to Legacy.
Legacy. But I feel like with the Shield, I mean, what they're doing is working, so I don't know if you would need to add somebody to them.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? Do you think Orton should be with them?
I see, like yourself, I see validity in both arguments. If he just goes heel and stays and the Shield goes on their own, you know, that's fine to me. I almost, only because he did have Legacy already, and the fact is that the Shield is working as an act because they have beaten everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think they need Randy Orton. And that said, if Orton turns heel, he's a guy that's sort of most, you know, like them to me. But I think he would. I just have this feeling that, to me, the Shield is highlighting Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
And with Randy Orton there, you kind of take that away. So if they weren't working, I guess, then I could see it. But it is working, so I personally would keep them apart, but if they put them together, I'm not going to throw my arms up and say it's the worst thing ever, you know, so.
What if they did, like, the Nation Domination back with The Rock, where The Rock kind of took over control from, you know, Farouk, who had it, and you have Dean Ambrose kind of take control from Orton?
Well, yeah, but that also happened. That also happened over a longer period of time.
Yeah, I mean, not right away, but I meant, like, Batista. You know, maybe he could settle into a role where Orton's a leader.
Yeah.
For a bit, and then, I mean, that's my thinking right now. So I'm just throwing it out there. But
well, you could
obviously. I don't think that will happen, but
you could go that route. I don't know about Ambrose as a babyface, though, which is the problem.
That's just what Rock turned into, you know. Well,
no, they excommunicated Farouk, and Farouk went babyface, not successfully.
Yeah.
I mean, until the
APA, until
the APA came around, Farouk was. I mean, Farouk and Bradshaw were almost future endeavored until being put together. So, you know, they kind of. That did Farouk no favors, that excommunication from the Nation.
That's true, sorry, yeah.
But, and I don't see Ambrose through his faith, and then what you would do is you'd kick Orton out, and I mean, the whole point of...
You're right back to where you're at.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I don't mind that idea. I think you could do that within the Shield, though. Of having, like, a Roman Reigns, you know, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, you know, get on Roman Reigns for costing them matches or for not being in spots and da-da-da-da.
It almost feels like he would be the best face out of them.
Well, he would be the big guy that snaps, right? A la Batista, right? So
that's true.
That's sort of when they inevitably kind of break up, I guess. That would be how I would see it happening or could see it happening, at least at this point.
Do you think they keep going for a while then, or?
I hope so. I mean, WWE, I have no kind of faith in them with any long, they don't have any long-term plans. So, it's just, you kind of cross your fingers and you hope, right? So, but, I mean, that's the Mania card as it sits right now. But speaking of creative, Eric Panowski has been is no longer the vice president of creative for WWE. That was a very short-lived run that he had there.
Okay.
So they've already posted the job, you know, all over Workopolis and all those places looking for a new vice president. But he didn't even last a year, this fella.
Okay. So, did you apply yourself for the job yet?
I did not. I did. The initial submission kind of I figured was going to cost me an interview.
Maybe we could tout our – they'll probably say tout your application.
Tout your application, exactly. 15
15 seconds. Tell us why you're good for creative.
Why would you help? How could you help creative? The Miz is a cock-sucking motherfucker.
There you go. Hey. And they would just be all over that, so you'd be fine.
You're hired.
You'd be first in line. You're hired. Book it.
You're hired. Book it. Speaking of someone that's hired, X-Pac has just signed his WWE Legends deal.
So. Yeah, I saw that come up. I saw because I was seeing people congratulate him. I was like, oh, fuck, I hope he's not into Hall of Fame.
What?
But
you, huh? You hope he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to be in there, but anyways.
Really?
X-Pac has never been, he's not high on my list of people. Now, I don't know, it's just something about him. I liked him as 1-2-3 kid, you know, and then he just got weird and I just stopped caring for him.
The thing with X-Pac 1-2-3 kid is that he really did open the door in WWE in terms
smaller
of
guys.
Well, yeah, there were already some, I mean, Bret and Shawn and Owen weren't big guys.
Yeah,
but the 1-2-3 kid was that really kind of small guy that made an impact, you know, like their version of Rey Mysterio, really, that they had in WCW. Not to the same, obviously. Mysterio took it to another level, but he was really that. When you think of the first kind of cruiserweight guy from that era, I mean, you had Dynamite Kids and stuff like that before him, but of that era, that's that guy. And then, I mean, again, with the stuff in DX and, you know, the NWO and things, I mean, he was. I mean, hell, Coco Beware is in, right? Nikolai Volkoff is in. So when you're looking there, they don't need, as we talked about, they've got Trish and Backlund. And, I mean, all these Bruno and Foley, you know.
Yeah.
So you can slide a 1-2-3 kid or an X-Pac in there, you know, and still create a decent class, right?
So, oh, yeah.
It's just like building a wrestling card, right? You need an opening match, and so I could see him going in. But that's not the case. He signed a Legends deal, you know, which is good.
And it makes sense since you have Billy Gunn and Road Dogg there, and obviously.
Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, two people you are going to see.
I will see them. I think they should kind of get a run, but I just don't know if they will, you know. Because I feel like if you use them just for these type of just one-off appearances, then what's the point? And you might, if you're going to use them, then just use them. So going against the Road Scholars, I think makes perfect sense. Like if they had a feud that lasted, you know, a couple months, I think that could be good for the Road Scholars.
I do too. I wrote something, I'll go back on WeTalkWrestling.com. I'm trying to remember, there was a couple ones, but I think it was something to the effect of who I would like to see return to WWE. Mm-hmm. And the New Age Outlaws were one of the acts that I said. And I had used, at the time, I had used the primetime players, because they were the ones getting the kind of the airtime at the time to have that run. But, you know, the Road Scholars works just as well now. You know, to bring that in and perfect feud, get these guys over and, you know, or give them some, you know, tag team legitimacy. And they didn't look out of place, you know, against Primo.
I didn't think so at all. I thought, I mean, I feel like with the Road Scholars, you know, I want them to go, you know, on their own, but I feel like there's no really place for them. So why not just have them go as a tag team and, you know, help get this tag team division somewhere, because you got the tag teams there.
Yeah.
You just have to put faith in it and actually go with it.
It's the sum of the parts, really, when you talk about the Road Scholars. You know, individually, yes, I think they will have great careers on their own, but not yet and not now. And so, I mean, they broke them up. They decided to go their separate ways, and all they've done is lose. You know, and it's just because they don't have anything for them. So the thing is let's, you know, let's, if you got something for them as a tag team, then Jesus Christ, use them as a tag team. I mean, like, that's kind of a no-brainer to me. and R-Truth is back, so you can put Kofi and Truth back together. You've got the Rhodes Scholars. You can have the New Age Outlaws. We talked about Primo and Epico. You know, sweet.
Primetime Players, Usos, Monsters of Funk.
Primetime Monsters of Funk. I mean,
that's my name for them. I think that's the best name for them. Sweet Tea and Brodus Clay.
The Monsters of Funk. Yeah, that works for me. you know, well,
Tensai needs to do something, and I know people are probably kind of down on him doing this, but I mean,
I don't think
you might as well.
I think that's great for him. You had to do something. Yeah. I mean, he was doing nothing. I mean, Sweet Tea is a sure as hell a great improvement over Tenzai, you know. So, yeah, that's I'm good with that. Rey Mysterio doesn't need surgery. Went to see Dr. James Andrews. They figure they're going to give him a new brace, and he's going to be able to do some stuff. But, I mean, by doing some stuff, you know, it really should be tag team stuff that he's doing, so him and Sin Cara can stay as a team. So you got another team there. So, I mean, you know, tag team action hot and heavy here in World Wrestling Entertainment.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they got the teams there. Just put some faith in it and go with it. I mean,
just fucking book them, damn it.
Book it.
I don't say it's as simple as that, but it really is as simple as that. You know, you've got the teams, use them. You know?
Yeah. Because even if you don't do much storylines, if you at least have them interacting with each other in some way, I mean, that's better than just randomly throwing singles guys together and, you know, for one night or whatever, having them go against each other.
Yeah, well, the thing is, what you really need to do is break up Hell No and get the titles onto, you know, say, like a Primetime Players and have them, you know, feuding with, like, you know, right now, the Usos, and you can have the Rhodes Scholars and the New Age Outlaws going and at the same time and have two tag team feuds going on at one time, you know, transition the Monsters of Funk, if they get over. And, you know, you could have a scenario whereby SummerSlam, the New Age Outlaws are winning the tag titles for the last time and losing them to Rhodes Scholars. You know, it's
exactly,
you know, that kind of thing. So there's lots of potential, I guess, is the best way to put it, right? So
would you break up Hell No by WrestleMania and have them just go at it at Mania, or do you think that's just too quick?
Well, you got a month still, right?
That's true.
There's 4 weeks, so you could, but it's one of those things where the story has already pretty much been written.
Exactly.
You just have to pull the trigger on it. So that's something you could do, you know, 2 weeks before Mania and still have it have some interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean, again, you got to lose the tag titles then. So, I mean, you do it, I guess there is the Primetime Players, right? So.
Yeah, or you do, I mean, you have them, if they go at each other, then they vacate the titles and throw a tournament up, you know, for the next pay-per-view, you know, or buy the next pay-per-view for Extreme Rules, so.
Yeah, have the finals at Extreme Rules, right? Yeah.
Or wherever, Payback, or whatever they want to call it.
But that would be good. No, I could do that. Yeah, have them vacate, and then, do a tag team. That really would actually, I mean, well, they did the tournament for the number one contendership in the fall, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought that's when, is that when Sin Cara and Mysterio won? Or something. I forget who. Or Rhodes Scholars.
I think Rhodes Scholars in the final.
And then they never really did anything. It seemed like it just kind of happened, and then they moved on. I was like, okay, well, that didn't really do anything.
Well, that seemed to be the peak of the tag team interest, at least short term, right? So, and you've got the British Ambition down in, I mean, I don't know if Oliver Gray is still hurt. You know, they got British Ambition down in NXT.
Okay.
Not a big fan of the Wyatt family. They're just big lumbering kind of oafs. They're a decent developmental kind of fodder for Bray Wyatt, but not anybody I would, you know, bring up, I guess, you know. But they've got some teams, and I mean, unfortunately, Tyson Kidd's hurt, so that takes, you know, that out. But and the Usos Primo and Epico as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that's always going to give you a solid match. So, you know, lots, lots of options at that there. So we'll see what they do for WrestleMania with the tag teams. But they did have to, speaking of WrestleMania, on WrestleMania weekend at WrestleCon, the fest, Bruno Sammartino was supposed to appear, and of course, now going into the Hall of Fame, he had to pull out. So WWE is actually sending William Regal as a make good. So Regal is going. So there'll be a WWE contracted performer at this WrestleCon.
Okay. There you go.
Interesting. So just have a look here if there's any other news bits that we've got before we. Sorry, anything else from Monday Night Raw that
trying to think if there was any. I feel like we got the big stuff, so I'm good with just moving along and seeing what else we got.
I thought we got it all. I heard a quote from Bret the Hitman Hart.
Okay.
And his quote, and I thought I'd get your, I know you're not a big TNA fan. You don't really watch it at all. You know of it.
No, I don't. I read up on it just to kind of see what's going on, but I really don't know who, is big. Well, I guess I can get who's big from spoilers, but I don't watch it, so.
Yeah. Well, Bret Hart's quote was that basically that AJ Styles should not waste his life in TNA. He needs to go to WWE because he thinks he's one of the most talented people and he needs to go to the big time.
But didn't AJ Styles try out for WWE before, I believe?
Well, that was a long time ago.
Okay.
There were a group of guys that, were in, that would have been given or offered developmental contracts, and AJ being one of them, and that was when it was, the $500 a week deal, where WWE was really hot, and WCW had stopped, folded, sold to Vince, so they were, the only game in town kind of thing, so kind of the first ripplings of that is that they were offering guys, basically $2,000 a month to go to Ohio Valley and train. So, and he had said no. And I mean, AJ Styles was on some Nitros towards the end.
Oh, was he? Okay.
In a tag team with Air. It was Air Paris and AJ Styles. And they were like, their gimmick were like Top Gun type guys. Like they had the jackets or whatever and the aviators. That was their gimmick. And they had the cruiserweight tag titles that they just introduced like a week before folding or 2 weeks before company folded and they would have been in that tournament. But so it looked like AJ had Fusion Media been able to purchase WCW, I think that AJ would have stayed there and been relatively successful there. But going around. But he's never really lately, I guess, been considered or hasn't considered going, but Brett's saying now's the time where you got to go. And I think he's in his 30s.
I think he's on to something. I mean, if you look at the big league, that's WWE. I mean, that's why people clamor for Sting to join up there, just to finally say he did it. So and from that point, I can see, the validity in the statement, whether I don't think he does it, because it seems like AJ Styles is definitely a TNA guy now, so I can't imagine he would do something like that, but
I guess it's just if the money was right. I mean, I think, he is in his 30s. He's starting to kind of, time is ticking, I guess. It is almost an now or an ever situation for him. And again, I don't necessarily disagree with Brett, but I don't know. The only reason that AJ should go is for the money. I don't think he would be someone that would be a top level star there, at least in the time that he has left in the ring.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I feel like he'd kind of be in maybe middle of the road, mid card guy. But who knows if he could maybe be a good rate for that or a good worker for that. So
I think he would, but I mean, I look at they have Kofi Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
They already have a Kofi Kingston.
Yeah.
So, for what they do, I mean, he's, I I don't mean to say that Kofi Kingston isn't a great worker, but, you know, I would think AJ is better, but AJ never get a chance to really show that more any more than Kofi does. So, you know, if they got a Kofi, I don't know. I mean, it's not like AJ, I wouldn't say no, this is detracting from the company that AJ Styles is here, but I don't know that he does any better, you know. Maybe he may make more money, I guess, is the only difference.
Especially if we finally get Shelton Benjamin back, MVP back, Carlito back. You know, you get those middle-of-the-road guys.
Yeah.
That should help out whenever they're – I felt like we were here and they were supposed to be back at Royal Rumble, and now you haven't heard anything. So maybe maybe none of those guys are coming around. So.
Well, Shelton's trying from what I hear. Shelton's still trying. Oh, okay. But and none of those guys are clearly going to say no if asked, but I don't know that now that is – necessarily. And again, they're very focused on WrestleMania right now, right? So
that's true. Yeah, that's true. Sorry.
Everything kind of is focused there, and they've got their card now. So it's just, you know what's funny is when I went through the Mania card, the one match I didn't put was Alberto Del Rio and Jack Swagger.
Oh, well, that ought to tell you something, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I figured that I wouldn't be surprised if that opens the show.
What's the world title match, and that has opened the show?
Opened the past few years, I guess.
So that would make sense. The only reason not to would be if Ziggler's going to cash in and you want to make a big deal of it middle of the show when you think the crowd might be needing a pick-me-up.
That's what I'm afraid of, too, is that, kind of going back to that thought of Ziggler cashing in. With the big matches, would Ziggler cashing in kind of get lost in the mix if he was to cash in at Mania?
Well, it's all about how you promote it, right? I mean, again, it isn't about WrestleMania night.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the next night on Raw and the following week.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you keep that as a big deal that he did this, then, it will be. Oh, that's the WrestleMania where Ziggler cashed in. But you're right. If he does it and he wins and it's not really mentioned, and maybe it's mentioned a bit on SmackDown and he is a champion and it's a lackluster run, you know, then you're not really – Swagger, which one did Ziggler cash in on? I keep saying Swagger. Which one did Ziggler cash in on? I don't know. Is it 28, 29? Which, trust me, it was that. Right? I mean, that's how it would go. So,
you feel like he's had the briefcase forever anyway. Just with Cena losing his so quickly, it's like, man, I forget that he has the briefcase still.
Well, and this is the longest, other than Edge. You know, I think the longest that someone's kept the briefcase, because Edge got it at Mania and then cashed it in the January at the New Year's Revolution.
At the New Year's, yep.
And so we're getting almost to that level there. It's not quite as long, but it's close. So, but the thing, the nice part about it, I keep saying this, the great part about Edge is that they didn't key in on the briefcase. They were so smart about not keying in on the briefcase in the weeks leading up to his cash-in, that when he did cash in, I was like, shit, I forgot he had that.
Yeah. And that's why it was good a couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago when Ziggler almost looked like he was going to cash in. They hadn't done that in a while, so I think it really got people thinking, that what happened at Survivor Series. I was saying there was people chanting to cash in then. Like in the live crowd.
Well, and they were. I mean, last man standing match. Okay, well, that's perfect. I mean, Alberto Del Rio beats Big Show. Big Show knocks him out at Elimination Chamber, and he cashes. And there were lots of easily bookable scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, now Ziggler's again. He's teasing cashing it in at WrestleMania, which tells me that he's not. But if they had plans. And this is a company that doesn't have any long-term plans. So, go out and cut a promo, talk about cashing in a Mania because you're not going to. And then next week it's like, after he cuts the promo, we changed our mind, you are cashing in a Mania. Like, I mean, and then it'll go that he's not, then he is, and he's not, then he is. I mean, they just, they changed their minds so much. It's just, you can't trust them, I guess, is the best way to put it. But, that's it. I'm just going to mention, there is a TNA pay-per-view this Sunday. It's Lockdown. Next.
Yep.
Before that was the all-cage match show. I guess now there's going to be about three matches in a cage. There's going to be Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray for the title in a cage. Wes Briscoe and Kurt Angle are going to have a cage match. And then they're going to have War Games with Sting's team and against the Aces and Eights.
I'm kind of following my Twitter feed, too. I don't know if you're seeing that they're revealing some new leader for Aces and Eights, according to some of my Twitter people. Oh. I don't know if I should give it away or not.
Well, I mean, by the time the show comes, it'll be over. So did Deacon Brown get
That's what it looks like, just from reading different wrestling sites I follow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that was going to be the plan. Is that D'Lo Brown is the vice president?
Vice president. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So they still have the president. D'Lo was just revealed and did a promo on Impact. I guess we'll watch that after the after we're done this, but. With D'Lo, he's the vice president. Eric Bischoff still set to be the president.
Okay.
So, at this point, anyway. So
take that for what you will, right?
Yeah, I mean, but TNA tends to have some more. Like, they don't tend to change their mind every week.
Well, I just meant, is that the best fit for this Ace of the Nate?
Eric Bischoff, you mean? Hell,
yeah.
Anymore. I mean, when there was talk about
Jeff Jarrett or somebody.
Well, when it was bigger deal. I mean, this really has run its course. You know.
Yeah.
And really now you're looking at, you've got Knox and Garrett and Wes Briscoe. I mean, this is the NWOB team, right? This is Scott Norton and Buff Bagwell and Vincent and Stevie Ray. I mean, this is not your A-listers, right? So, and Devon was your big mouthpiece. I mean, he's the kind of guy that if Eric Bischoff was going to get involved, Devon should have been the lowest man on the totem pole, right? So, and you still have, what's his name? The guy from that won the gut check.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Anyway.
Okay.
He was set to be in it, too. So, I mean,
okay.
You've got, and now you got Garrett Bischoff, right? So it's like, whatever. And that's the only reason I think Eric might do it is because his son's in it. But, you know.
Yeah.
It is long since
run its course.
Yeah, and had my interest. I mean, and this is at a time where TNA is about to come up. I think this is the last Impact from the Impact Zone. Start to go on the road, which again, it'd be an interesting move for the company from a business perspective. So,
I have thought about if they were to come here to Indianapolis to actually check them out, just to see what the live experience would be like, if that's worth anything.
I would go if TNA came to still. I would go.
Yeah.
And again, you're going to get some good wrestling, and you do get guys like, I mean, there's some recognizable guys like a Kurt Angle or like a D-Von and. You know, Bubba Ray and you know, guys like that. So it's a mix, and most of their divas. I mean, when you talk about Tara and Mickey Kim, you know, so
yeah.
There's a mix, and you get Earl Hebner. So
who doesn't want to go see for a referee? I mean, that's money worth alone.
He'd be over in Calgary, I tell you.
Is he?
Yeah, all he gets is "you screwed Brett" chants. So. I mean,
man,
I think those would be a little bit louder in Calgary.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I would check them out for sure if they came. And I mean, if they come for an Impact, well, Christ, then you get Sting and Hogan and guys like that. So it would be again even more worse thing. And if you haven't seen, I'd love to see Joseph Park live.
Mm-hmm.
That just cracks me up.
And I've never seen Sting live in any capacity, so I guess that would be worth something just to finally say, hey, I saw him. Because I've always pledged my allegiance to the WWF, so Sting to me is just like, eh. And now, you know, whether or not that's the right, you know, I know some people love him and whatnot, but for me, just being a WWF guy, I'm like, I never cared for him even as a wrestling fan just because I never knew him. So
yeah.
I just never paid attention to him. So, you know, I don't have any feelings towards him.
Yeah, and I never, I've never seen Sting live either. I mean, I did start watching, the WCW. I mean, up here we didn't get TBS in Calgary till about late 1992, I want to say.
Okay.
So, and even then it was in the old school, like those channels that you had didn't get if you paid for it. They were in Scramble Vision, as we called them.
Yeah.
Everything was like yellow and blue and scrambled. Like the old pay-per-views used to be back in the day where you could listen to the pay-per-view, but you couldn't see it if you didn't buy it. And so that was what it was. So, I mean, I would listen, and then when we actually got TBS after a while, which I think was like 93 actually is when it finally come in, that was around the Shockmaster and such. So I do remember watching that and the White Castle of Fear and stuff like that, and Vader and Sting. But I've certainly never seen them live because WC didn't come up north. So that would be something to see, right?
I don't know if I don't know if WCW ever came around here that much. Maybe a Thunder, but I don't know if a Nitro ever came here. I could be wrong, but
they were big in Chicago too, right? You talked about going up there for, you know, Payback perhaps, and that.
I haven't been up to Chicago for anything other than last year was the first time I've ever been up there for a show. So.
Oh, okay, but yeah.
That was Extreme Rules, and that's the first time we've actually traveled. Well, I did go to a Raw in Louisville, Kentucky. Or Lexington, Kentucky, one of the two.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Well, it's all the same.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
It's south of you.
It is south of me. That's true. I've actually watched wrestling north of me, believe it or not.
Cool.
They had Edmonton is north, and that was the Backlash pay-per-view where it was the Mick Foley, Randy Orton blow.
Okay.
A massive hardcore match that they had, and a rematch of WrestleMania 20 with Benoit, Michaels, and Hunter. And so, I went up north to see that. So
never forget Orton's face when he first hit those thumbtacks. I mean, that.
Oh, the look on it. I know. That was tremendous.
The look on it, I mean, and even I think in one of the Mick Foley DVDs, you know, he has like 8,000 out there.
Yeah.
He does the commentary, I believe, on that match. And, yeah, he said Orton really, you know, didn't know what to expect, and that's what you get. So
yeah, and that's he got it. Whatever he was expecting, he got it.
Because they had that match, and I believe the Edge Foley one from WrestleMania.
Right.
And I don't know if it was one. It was called like Mick Foley's Hits and Misses.
Foley.
Because
he had the greatest hits and misses.
That's the one it is. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because
that's with the Vader, and he talks about breaking it. Like
I think
Vader actually broke the nose of Foley, and he asked him to do it.
Yeah, broke his. Yeah, that's right. That's.
And I'm like, really? I'm like, I know Foley's crazy, but man, that just.
Because they had the raw footage of it, because it never, that whole match. Never,
yeah, he said I have it in my private collection, so he wanted to show it.
Because it they edited that off TV, so it never made TBS there.
Yeah.
Cause he had,
so I have that one.
And they think Foley's coming out with getting another DVD this year sometime.
Yeah, I think that's that. I probably will pick that one up because I think it looks pretty good. Because I want to see the light, you know. I've read the books of him, but it'd be nice to see other people talking about him and to see him talk about himself. Because whenever the WWE videos, when they did that first, you know, I think it was Jericho's, where they actually did biography first, you know, and then the matches. I thought that was the smartest thing they've done because I kind of like, you know, reading, you know, hearing some of the backstory. I hated doing the backstory match, because you're like, you don't feel like you get the full picture, but here you got, you know.
Yeah, they've done, they did that originally, was all documentary and then matches. And then they got onto this kick, you're right, of like, I think like with Hunters and stuff where it got to be documentary matches, or like talk about the match, show the match, talk about it, show it. And yeah, okay. And I was not a fan of that, you know, especially because, hell, I've seen all the matches. So the ones that I want to go back to, I will, and sort of pick and choose and such. So, that sort of format doesn't necessarily work for me. But I mean, there was the Piper one was, you know, they did a whole big documentary and they did his thing. There was some of the Austin ones where they've done it all and then shown the matches at the end or in a second one. This Bret Hart one appears to be talk about the match, show the match, but it's the Dungeon Collection. So these are all kind of previously unreleased.
I think you guys will be all over that one, so you can tell me all about it after you watch it.
Oh, yeah, I haven't got it yet. You know what, I was stupid because I was at the mall yesterday, and as soon as I was leaving, I said, shit, I should have picked up
that. Oh, did that come out this week? Okay.
It was past Tuesday. When I left, I was like, damn, I should have got that, and I totally forgot. I think it was actually the next – last night that I was at the mall, and then I thought this morning. Okay. I was like, damn it, I never got that. But it's going to be – but again, previously unreleased, so – it's there. I mean, I just saw the Dynamite Kid documentary. I watched that this past week.
Okay.
It was okay. It was I was largely familiar with most of the stories. And even for people that don't live in Calgary necessarily, right? I mean, because even the Stampede stories, it's like, okay, I'd heard those before. But the nice part of it, and I mean, they do go visit Dynamite Kid, and there is some, but it's not like sitting down and it isn't like they don't show like a whole sit down with Dynamite. They kind of clip into him, kind of like the same as they interview Bruce Hart, and then they interview Bret Hart and Anvil and Bob Orton and Slick, and they've got these little bit interviews with these guys, and they go in about different topics and such. And just Dynamite is another guy they go to in it is basically what it is. And so it isn't like they're sitting down and talking to Dynamite Kid. For showing it for say 2 hours of Dynamite Kid talking about his career, it's blips and very good. And I mean, and some of it, again, it's fun to watch, or listen, I guess, to other wrestlers like Harley Race and Bob Orton and Jimmy Hart and guys like that telling the same stories. You know, it almost like, it would in the world where you get all like the Hulk Hogan bullshit of the week and wrestling is very exaggerated. You hear the Kevin Nash stories and things like that that are, manipulations of the truth. This at least backs up, the story. The Dynamite will tell a story, and someone else with nothing else to gain will tell the exact same story, right? So, that is nice about it. So, I mean, it's a good job. I mean, go to High Spots and buy it. It's worth, it's worth the money. Because it certainly isn't like a $40 investment, for the $20 it's going to be to get it. It's certainly worth the money, and I mean, it is, they've got some New Japan stuff and in there. It's Honky Tonk does some stuff, the interview on it too, but it's a good look, and Harry Smith as well. I mean, that's a good, that's a really interesting, look at it, is Harry Smith talking about the British Bulldogs, And Billington's Dynamite Kid's daughter Bronwyn Billington, who Mo and I saw at the last Next Generation Triple H Calgary Heart Legacy show. She's
Her
boyfriend, husband, whatever, is a wrestler. And she's the valet.
Okay.
So
there you go.
But that part was really interesting about how Dynamite remembers like every bit of his career still. So. He'd be watching a match, and he'd go, oh, the heat spot's coming. This is, like, the first time he's watched the match since it's happened. You remember? It's happened, right?
And that's my favorite part when they do some of those DVDs, if you have the guys actually talk about it, like with Edge's latest DVD. I loved him talking about that very first match, while it's happening, like the commentary.
Yes.
So hopefully they kind of go to that a little bit more. Especially if you have like Austin, who's still around. If you can get these guys that are around to talk about it, why not? So,
well, and
I still think Jericho's DVD that's still my favorite one. I thought that was just everything about that one was just well done.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about DVDs, and I'll mention a little quick.
Sorry, not to get off topic.
Well, we're definitely on topic, and I'm about to get a little bit off topic because we're talking about great DVDs, and I was thinking about the worst WWE DVD that I've seen in quite some time, which was the Bobby the Brain Heenan. DVD. I just didn't think they did any service whatsoever to Bobby Heenan on that. Bobby Heenan is actually booked at this WrestleCon for WrestleMania week.
Okay. Busy. Wow.
Good news, because Bobby Heenan was, you know, really had some health issues.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's why I'm surprised to hear that it's actually happening. So.
Which is, yeah, extremely good news, because the last, you know, you don't hear about Bobby Heenan every day, but the last thing that you did hear was that, you know, it may just be a matter of time because the health issues were so bad. And so good that he's going to be in well enough to get out and do that, you know. So that's good news. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the alternate commentary, I remember when Austin, that was a big thing in the when DVDs first came out. Went from VHS to DVDs. And that was, like, when they were doing some of the profiles. There was always at least, like, Kevin Kelly and Austin. You know,
yeah.
I remember the WrestleMania DVD where you had Kevin Kelly and Austin doing the commentary of the WrestleMania 15 main event, and Kevin Kelly and Rock was doing the commentary on the main event, and so you could mm-hmm. listen to each one do commentary on the same match.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, that was cool. You could watch Austin do it and then flip right over and watch Rock do it. It was cool.
Because what's funny is about the Brock Lesnar one, I have that, and it's just it's VHS transferred to DVD.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. But then the matches have where he gave that promo where he was talking about he's, you know, an ass kicker, where it's like him sitting in the back, like in a studio type thing.
I'm not.
Those are yeah. like kind of placed throughout the matches. You know, they'll do that and then the match. But, I mean, the Lesnar one was kind of cool because it did have some interesting, very beginning of the road matches. Like there was one with him and Shelton Benjamin versus the Prototype.
Yes.
And then
Rico?
I think it was Rico, but they had some weird, I think they called him Ricardo, but I'm almost positive it was Rico who would later become the manager of Billy and Chuck. It was really unrecognizable, so it was hard to tell who it was, but.
He was known as Rico Constantino.
There you go. That's who they, yeah. And that's what I thought. I'm like, it's got to be him.
Yep.
He just looked very different then. And of course, John Cena looked very different in that brief stint. And I think it's for OVW Tag Team Championships, they called it.
Yeah, the Southern States, whatever, Ohio Valley Tag Team Championships. And they were the Minnesota Wrecking Crew.
Stretching Crew.
Stretching Crew, that's right. Minnesota Stretching Crew.
Yes. So I was like, okay. But that was, and then there was the Brock Lesnar and Leviathan match.
The Demon of the
Deep. Yeah, became Batista. So that was interesting to see Batista kind of in lots of eyeliner and even tighter tights than he would normally wear. So
I think did he have like the yellow contact lenses? Did he wear those at that
point? It's hard to tell because the eyeliner kept bugging me, so I didn't really check out his eyes. I just kept looking at, I mean, I saw his eyes, but I'm like, oh man, I think he was with like a couple ladies named Sin and something else.
Yes.
It was just a weird thing, and I'm glad that they did not go that route for his actual WWE run, because I don't know if that would have really gone over. But.
Well, you know what they did do, though? I mean, heck, when he first debuted, you know, he was Deacon Batista.
That is, okay, yeah, that's true. He was Deacon, yeah.
He was a good Deacon Batista. And then, Leviathan, the Demon of the Deep, was part of the Disciples of Sin, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And the when you said the woman Sin there?
Maybe, I think it was a man. Maybe it was a gentleman. He wasn't out there. It was two ladies out there with him.
Yeah, one of those women is Jim Cornette's wife.
Okay.
And then the other fellows that were in that kind of group deal were Mordecai.
Okay.
And Tomko.
Oh, okay.
I forget the names that they had down there, but they had different names when they were in this group team. It was, yeah, very evil, demonic deal. But
that's still a good time at OVW back then. I tell you, I mean, Lesnar, Batista, Cena, and Orton.
Yeah.
I mean, really, when you think back then, you're like, man.
And you keep going with the Bashams and
yeah.
– Matt Morgan was down there.
And that's who I was thinking from TNA. That's who I
yeah.
was thinking had a brief run. I think he was even on Lesnar's Survivor Series team.
Yes, he was.
Against Cena.
With Nathan Jones.
Nathan Jones, the prison, the ex-con from Australia, right?
Yes, the Colossus of Bugger Road. The man who took, the legend has it, took so many steroids, he actually started lactating.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
There you go.
But I'm trying to think of anybody. Yeah, Nick Dinsmore, Eugene was down there. Rob Conway was down in Ohio Valley at that time. The Haas brothers, you know, when he was still alive, were down there. I mean, you had lots of these. So, I mean, that was really a golden age of development, you know. So, and hopefully one that they'll, you know, that they can get back. I mean, WeTalkWrestling.com just wrote a look at the NXT, NXT roster. Now, I didn't go through everybody. Really just the guys that are being utilized now that aren't already on the main roster. Like, I didn't talk about Big E Langston, who's the champion, because we see Big E Langston. Didn't talk about the Shield, because they're, you know, the Shield. Didn't talk about the Usos or Justin Gabriel or Michael McGillicuddy, those kind of guys who are down there, interdispersed. Yeah. But we know about
You're talking about the actual, like, NXT roster as of now, right?
Yeah, they're like Corey Graves, you know.
Okay.
Guys like that. Leo Kruger. You know, the Ascension, Conor O'Brien.
Is Steamboat's son down there or something?
Yeah, Richie Steamboat down there. So, Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero. From Honor, you know, down there. So, you know, some of those, Paige and Sasha Banks, two of the women that are down there. Even Sakamoto, who I included. I mean, you know, down there. So Bray Wyatt, who we knew was Husky Harris, in a totally different character.
I've seen some of his promos, and for some reason I'm kind of into it, but I don't know.
He is my favorite act in all of wrestling. You know, and just, I can't wait for him to come to the main roster. And you better get you better get the same treatment. You know, luckily Triple H is behind, introducing guys with, like, vignettes or giving them reasons and such. So that's what they did in NXT, is they started with the vignettes, and then he came out. So if they do that, I think, like, he can be just as successful. So,
because there's, I mean, just from watching a few, you know, YouTube videos, I'm like, man, that's something different, and I feel like that could kind of be something unique.
Yeah.
So,
and be really cool. I mean, that's what Damian Sandow was, something different. You know, and that's kind of why it kind of pops and clicks to me. You know, Fandango is nothing different.
Yeah.
And it, so it will.
You didn't say it right. You got to say it right.
Hmm?
Feel the A breathe.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. How do you say it? You say.
Fandango.
No.
That's not right.
It's Future Endeavor.
Oh, I'm sure. Disco Inferno ripoff? Is that what it is?
It's a piece of ballroom dancer. And in 8 years after Dancing with the Stars was popular. You know, and that's exactly what it is. And hell, I wrote on WeTalkWrestling.com back the future.
Is that what you write for?
That is, believe it or not, the future of Fandango, and how this gimmick is going to come on and it's going to fail. And I wrote that on. I went and I looked back. I wrote that on November 27th, and it's still relevant today because they went with the gimmick, they dropped the gimmick, they brought the gimmick back, and I mean, it's just it. If you want to know, it's called The Future of Fandango. Spoiler alert, you can read all about how he's going to get released, even though I think in watching him and seeing, I think Johnny Curtis has talent. But this gimmick is going to just kill it. Like, it's just,
of course, I said, why couldn't he be a killer heel? Like, they did the opposite with Brodus Clay. But
yeah.
So with Fandango, maybe they make him, like, this really just,
well,
you know.
I mean, we talk
guy that comes out and destroys you. I don't know. You know, something like that.
You know why Gorgeous George was so great going into the 50s? Is because Gorgeous George was this pretty sissy that threw bobby pins to the crowd, that everybody was chanting that he was, you know, was just giving, you know, like, gay slurs out to this guy. And he was an ass kicker in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most infuriating part. this quote-unquote sissy could wrestle circles around everybody, right? And that was the gimmick. So you could, and why not do that, right? But
that's not, yeah, that's not, I mean, I don't think it happens, but we can still say it could happen.
No, it won't. But I mean, that's exactly what it should. But do you watch The Simpsons?
No, I do not watch The Simpsons. I know. That's crazy, isn't it?
Well, I'm just curious.
I heard there was a wrestling bit, or was it a wrestling-themed episode, or was there just some...
No, it's a wrestling-themed episode where Grandpa Simpson used to be, whatever his name was like Gorgeous Gary or something.
Uh-oh.
He was basically Gorgeous George, like, because this would have come back to, like, the 50s and stuff, the golden age of wrestling. And it was so funny because Grandpa Simpson is going... Back then, the good guys were called baby faces, and the bad guys were called heels. I'm like, shit, I just heard Grandpa Simpson say baby face on television. Simpson's exposing the business.
Uh-oh.
But what was it? And then at one point, they're like, oh, don't worry. He could just quit this fake wrestling. And then Mr. Burns, who's like this big fan of him. Was because he was a bad guy, so he was so Mr. Burns was naturally a big fan of the bad guy, and he goes, wrestling's fake. He goes, but if that were true, all their fans would be morons. And then he looked right into the camera, right? It was like, oh,
uh-oh. Well, it's good to see that there's some mainstream appeal for wrestling, because I don't know if you noticed on ESPN they do a power rankings for WWE every week.
Do they really on ESPN?
Yep. Well, on the .com. I don't know. I doubt if it's anywhere else, but there's somewhere. Yeah, there's. I don't know where it's usually at, but I've seen it up before. Because I think after TLC, the Shield were number one power ranking, and they'll do a little write up about why they're number one.
Hmm.
So I feel like wrestling's starting to get some of that. Can you imagine if the Attitude Era was now, like how popular that could be, in the mainstream appeal with Twitter and Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
I could just imagine, how much it would explode just, based off some of the stuff that we saw back then. And I think with The Rock having the belt, if he shows up on a movie set with that huge piece of gold, that, that could be good.
Well,
publicity for it. So
it's not even showing up at the movie set. It's going on Jay Leno. And
that's what I meant, like the if he goes to red carpet.
Yeah, and I mean,
and not just having Wade Barrett at a red carpet where Barrett's probably not even in the movie that long.
Hey, you know what though? That movie and the new Halle Berry WWE Films movie, The Call.
That looks creepy to me. I'm sorry, I can't watch. I'm not.
Well,
like I don't do horror movie or like suspense type, and that just looks.
What'd you call Halle Berry?
A whore.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't do horror movies. That's but
all I know is whenever I see Halle Berry, I think of "Make Me Feel Good," and then Billy Bob gets her from behind, and then she's like, "I'm surprised there's just not an Oscar sitting on that table as they're doing it."
Yeah. But David Otunga is a little bit in that movie, and I've seen that on commercials on like regular television shows, so not just WWE.
Okay.
So that one's getting out there a little bit. I went and saw Snitch a couple weeks ago, and what's it called, Dead Man Down?
Yeah, Dead Man Down. Now, that one, I mean, it looks like it could have potential. And, I mean, hey, they didn't get Colin Farrell and Terrence Howard, who are pretty – those are two big, movie stars. So it's like
– well
– but I did find it funny when Sheamus called out Wade Barrett for, not really being in there because – in the previews, they're always showing, Wade Barrett's in there. And I'm like, well, where's he even at? I can't even, even if I slow it down in super slow motion, I can't even see where he's at. So.
I think he was ducking behind that car or something in the.
Oh,
there he is. But
there he is.
But they did show the trailer for Dead Man Down in the coming attractions on the Snitch as well. So, but that was the WWE strategy, and I think it'll work. Is basically attaching themselves to some of these movies and one of the stars, but they didn't go out and sort of develop this like they did with, say, The Marine or See No Evil or, that back when it was, when it had first started, these WWE films, whatever, I forget the other one that Cena was in and all that shit, but so
first 12 rounds, I think it was
12 rounds in the Marine, and they had another one.
Well, now aren't those WWE films? I thought they keep
Halle Berry and Dead Man Down are WWE films, but they went with a different strategy, is that they basically bought into movies that were...
Okay, so they're like getting a producer credit, probably, or whatever.
Yeah, and kind of putting it... They didn't develop...
They didn't actually create it.
Yeah, like they did with...
Explains a lot.
Yeah, like they did with these 12 rounds and Cena Evil and stuff like that, so...
Yeah, they actually made those.
But they'll get a cut, right? So, I mean, they'll be...
Oh, yeah.
Presumably, that'll be more profitable, right? So...
Yeah.
One would think, I mean, we'll have to wait till the... numbers all come out, just probably in 6 months kind of thing for it, but maybe even a year. But I would think that would be a good strategy. But at least the marketing's there. And we talk about, you know, going on all these talk shows and red carpets, The Rock with the title. I mean, he had Snitch. He's got G.I. Joe coming out. You know, I think he's got Fast and Furious. I think
that comes out in the summer.
Yeah, he won't have the belt by then, but, you know. But certainly G.I. Joe is coming in the next couple of weeks here, isn't it? So
he is being advertised for Extreme Rules. At least he was, and now he isn't, so I don't know where that's at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So
that's what I think, because I was saying, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like people are just like, oh, The Rock's gone after WrestleMania, but then I feel like I haven't really seen any signs that he will be, personally, but I mean...
Well, he's going to Europe. Because he's in Greece, I think, maybe.
Okay, for Hercules?
Hercules,
to shoot?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is, he's,
I guess that makes...
And he's wanted to be Hercules. Like, this is, that's why he's, that's why he can't pass a wellness test, is because,
well, I'm sure,
because he's Hercules. So he's jacking himself up for it. So he really wanted to do that. Because I think that Hercules is going to be as close to Scorpion King, you know, as we're going to get, at least right now. And that was... probably still, I mean, and he was a bigger star to, you know, that was probably his biggest movie, right?
That.
And that was the height of his wrestling popularity, and everybody sort of translated over. I think he's a bigger mainstream star now. But I still think, you know, the Scorpion King was his peak of moviness so far, right? So.
Yeah.
But he is, in fact, a huge movie star. Contrary to what some people may believe.
It seems like his movies do really well, yeah, but I don't feel... I think it's stupid when people say, oh, they put the belt on a movie star, and I'm like, well, it's not like it was David Arquette, you know.
No, exactly. And then people that...
And that's what bugs me when people were saying the movie star thing. I'm like, now, wait a minute. The Rock has paid plenty of dues, you know, come on. He... got Die Rocky Die chanted at him. So I feel like he's paid plenty of dues to, you know, come around and say, hey, I won the title run. So.
Well, and the fact is, and I hear people, I get some, you know, people on Twitter, you know, hit me up and are at We Talk Wrestling. And they'll talk about how he's a part-timer. And
I don't...
You know,
whatever.
Oh, he's a part-timer, he's not on the thing, or he's the belt, you know. I said, like, Hulk Hogan, growing up, you know, if he was on a show once a month, other than a 30-second, from the pages of World Wrestling Federation magazine, this is update, you know, with Mean Gene or with Lord Alfred Hayes or whatever, Greg DeGeorge, and you get, a 30, 45-second Hulk Hogan promo, you know, something Andre, da da da. That's all you got. And sure, and I mean, if he ever wrestled on Superstars, Christ, like five times maybe I remember him wrestling on Superstars, right? And something happened every time.
Yeah.
You know? Definitely. And so that to me is like people complaining about it. It's like, no, you pay for Rock. You know,
the house show thing, like people are like, well, the champion has to be in house shows. I'm like, does he really? I mean, he's a champion.
Yeah.
I feel like the house shows should be more towards the guys that need to work, honestly.
But you still have to have a draw for people to go, and really.
Oh, well, yeah, I know.
And really, house shows aren't what they used to be, and they're certainly not a revenue stream that's in the, you know, their top say five, right? And it's just a situation where, yeah, you use them to work in. But, I mean, WWE now, I mean, like, they're talking about it coming back to Calgary here, you know, Raw or whatnot, in May, and they haven't, and that'll be 2 years. Almost. It was August that we got a SmackDown, August of 2011 that we got a SmackDown. And that was the last time that they were here. So they really are like a, you know, like a Harlem Globetrotter type deal where they're just, you know, they're a touring company and they pop in your town and you go and you see the WWE. It's not like when they were running three shows a night and you're out to see the stars of wrestling and it's just so great, I got to see this. It's just, yeah, you know, I got to see this guy, or, you know, it's like, no.
That's why we've been lucky here, because we had Raw and SmackDown, I think, in 2011, and then we had a SmackDown last year and Survivor Series, and now we're getting another Raw, so it's like, first, my hope is finally a WrestleMania comes back, but I don't know if that'll happen.
Well, they're talking about Florida again for...
yeah, I saw for Orlando.
For 31.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because we got the stadium... We got the huge Lucas Oil Stadium where the Colts play that. If they want these big stadium type deals, then, you know, Indy's perfect, especially since we've hosted a Super Bowl. I'm like, come on now. The Super Bowl, you know.
I think there's a shot before 40 of getting it.
It could be.
But the thing
is, it's been since 1992. I can tell you that right now, however many years that's been. So I'm not planning on it happening, but it would be ridiculously good if it could. So.
The thing is that they've got their, you know, their Chicago's, their Florida's, their Los Angeles, their, you know, their New York's that they,
yeah,
they,
exactly,
that loop, the Detroit, so, you know, they've got their, you know, Toronto, you know, WrestleMania 18, so. Been a while since they went 12 years in between Toronto, you know,
yeah,
right? They went 20 years. It was WrestleMania 23 and WrestleMania 3 that was Detroit, right? So, I mean, you have a better chance than I do. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
In Calgary.
Well, if we get it here, you have a place to stay at my house. I offer my house up to you.
There you go. That might be the WrestleMania that we finally make the trek to. And, I mean, in Calgary, it'd be perfect. It'd be only because, but they'd have to do it in the outdoor stadium. But the stadium's called McMahon Stadium, so.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's already tailor made there, right?
It's already, yeah. What's funny is that I was looking at the pay per view schedule, and it's practically the same cities as last year. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah, yeah, it's like.
Like St. Louis is getting Extreme Rules, I believe.
Yeah.
Chicago is getting the June pay per view.
Right, the payback.
I think. Yeah. Miami's getting Hell in the Cell, and of course Miami just had
Mania.
So I'm like, it's funny. I mean, maybe they're going around on pay-per-views, just the same cities, just, you know, rotating them around.
Well, it burn them out, right? I mean, if they work, they work, and then when they stop working, well, then you get a new one, like a Toronto, where they're clamoring for it because they haven't had it. Well, they just in Toronto house show, just they had a huge crowd there, and then again they're. Because crowds are getting disappointed in Toronto, disappointing for them in Toronto, and so they just kind of stopped going there. So, yeah, it's a cycle. I mean, we were lucky in Calgary that, you know, we were part of their, on their radar and got their loop for a while, and then, you know, our crowd started to go down, and then they just went, oh, okay, well, it's not, you know, Calgary isn't really a, you know, sad as it is, Calgary is a wrestling history town, but not a wrestling present town.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
So it's how it is. But yeah, that is going to probably do it. AlwaysMillerTime.com. What can you tell me about that?
That is my Indiana Pacers site that I'm the editor of. My family actually has half season tickets to the Pacer games. So I've been to about 13 games this year, and
nice.
I've been writing for them since about last February. You know, just give it a read there if you like the Pacers, if you like the NBA. Because during the summer, obviously, it's hard to write about Pacers every day, so I try to do some NBA stuff. But, you know, mostly we try to stick to Pacers writing, and obviously this season they've been doing pretty good. really have high expectations that they'll make a run to the conference finals, and an NBA finals would be perfect world, but I think if they get to the conference finals, I think that would even, that would be their ultimate goal. Right now they're about 3.5 games up in the division, so it's looking good for a winning division for the first time in, I believe, 10 years.
Wow.
So, and they got the right players around. You know, we had a couple teams where people complained about, oh, it's too many thugs on the team and whatnot, but now we got these good guys here, and Paul George was just in the All-Star game, so it's a good time to be a Pacers fan. I think basketball around here is, you know, really good. We got the colleges going, Butler and IU, so.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just a good time, and I've always been a big Pacers fan. You know, the early 90s, I think that's when my sports life was at a high, because you had wrestling at its peak. I had the Pacers at its, you know, pretty much where at their peak. So I feel like now I'm like, man, I want, you know, I long for those days when it can get back to there. But, yeah, I enjoy riding, and I appreciate you guys always tweeting it out there. So if anybody, you know, on your followers list wants to follow me personally,
yes,
they can follow me at Stephen A. That's the Stephen with the PH, 1181. And they can catch all my writing. I know I've written a couple of things for you guys, wrestling-wise. I also write on, it's called Wrestling Insights. I think it's .wordpress.com.
Yeah.
There's a few other places you can find me, but I try to write wherever I can and talk whenever I can, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, thanks for coming on. Thanks for Mo may be in trouble here. That's all I'm saying.
I appreciate it. I love talking with you guys. I feel like we got a good friendship just over the internet, which is funny to think, but, I just feel like I have a good connection with both you guys, and it's always a pleasure to tweet back and forth. You know, we have tweet conversations, and who knows, one of these days we'll have to try to figure out some way to meet, because I think it would be a grand old time.
Yeah, we'll have to get to when WrestleMania, comes to the Hoosier Dome again.
Oh, well, if that's the case, you would have to go just stand on a pile of dirt.
Yes.
Since I remember, we blew that thing up.
Yeah, I remember
that. That was the news story of the day when that thing blew up. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, it was. I saw it was on news. It made news here. I remember that. So
that in Market Square Arena. That's well known because that's where Elvis played his last concert.
Ah, there you go.
And we have a little. There's a plaque outside on the corner where that's at, and it's a tribute to Elvis. It's all gold plated, and people will put peanut butter sandwiches by there because that was his favorite snack.
Yes, peanut butter and banana, wasn't it? Fried peanut butter.
I'm sure some bum is like, oh, it's Elvis's day, so I'm going to get me a free sandwich.
That's right. Now, is the plaque shaped like a toilet bowl?
Unfortunately not. It's an actual, like, just a little small monument, but a toilet bowl would be perfect.
Oh,
so maybe next time I'll find a toilet bowl and just put that out there one day.
Right over. Dang, man, a ding-dang dude.
This is my Elvis tribute.
Yes. Awesome.
But, yeah, I enjoyed coming on here. Hopefully we can get this WrestleMania roundtable going in a couple weeks when we see that the card's all set.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Wrestling Insights. I think Jason from there wants to come on and do that too. So we'll get a big the card. I mean, we've got six matches. We'll probably get, what, 8 or 9, I would think. So just a few more to go, and then we can have a, yeah.
I think this is going to be a big WrestleMania, just because they want to really do it up, and because the Super Bowl is not going to be there till next year. So I think WWE really wants to put a lot into this year's, just to try to get attendance records and all that. So.
Well, and I think, they're gonna say they have the attendance record whether they do or not. But
yeah,
I mean, I just think being in New York with the media and such there, and you know, Rock, Cena, I think will get that mainstream interest, and Brock Lesnar to a degree too. And I mean, then you get the Undertaker in terms of the fans from yesterday, and you get CM Punk and such for the fans and Cena for the people for today. So I think, yeah, this one will be, as it sits, I think it probably will be the biggest ever. So, but yeah, so that's going to wrap it up for another week. So at We Talk Wrestling on Twitter, it was at Stephen with a PH 1181. Did I get that
Stephen
right?
Stephen A. 1181.
Yes, sir. And we're WeTalkWrestling.com, AlwaysMillerTime.com, two great sites. Addy, A-D-D-I-E, at WeTalkWrestling.com. If you've got a question, we did get some, but we'll deal with those coming up. So we got some. We just didn't run out of time.
We answered them, I'm sure, some way.
We do have the never-ending show, it seems. But, but that's going to do it. So in the meantime and in between time, that is going to be it, another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.